And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. You can tell by my voice, it's just a little bit rough today. I'm fine. It's gonna get great. Yes, it's totally true. I was talking to myself before I came on the air. I had to test my voice to see if it would hold up. All right. Some of these things that I'm gonna tell you are gonna come across as like super obvious, and I've got a at least hold in my mind that maybe no one has ever heard this information before. This might be the first time that you've heard this. This program, I've kind of given it the title Health Essentials. I don't know that every single item I cover is totally essential, but, you know, this program is really for people that are open-minded, they're curious, they want to learn, what can I do to help myself? Man, that's the way I like it. It never disturbs or bothers me at all when somebody says, I'm going to go home and do my own research and see what I can determine and figure out. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this person really wants to help themselves. Just like if somebody comes in my door and they have a small box or a large box full of vitamins and supplements, I can pretty quickly look at everything that they've purchased. And I can tell, oh my goodness, they're trying to help their mind, or they're trying to help their blood sugar. Or these are supplements that might be very specific for a person that's dealing with pain inflammation, or these supplements are good for the digestive tract. But I like that. That's what that means. If a person is taking supplements and they're trying to be careful about what foods they put in their mouth, that means that they are trying to make an effort to help themselves. Isn't that what you would want? Of course. Here's a study right here. It comes from Holland. Okay. In one study, four groups of Danish men, they ate their normal diet for 6 months, but they added 1 liter of sugared soda per day. In this article, it doesn't tell me what the name of the soda is, but just use your imagination. You could say Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper. Okay, that's going to be the definition of 1 liter of sugared soda. You know how many ounces a liter is? Well, it's almost 34. I just looked it up. It says it's 33.8 ounces. So that's a little over a quart. Now, I know what you're thinking. I drink a lot more than that. No, I'm just joking about that. Okay, so four groups of men, they ate their normal diet, they weren't asked to change what they ate, but they added 1 liter of soda a day. Then the second group, they had 1 liter of diet soda per day. And the third group, they gave them 1 liter of milk. You know, you go out to the barn, you take your Guernsey cow, you milk her, and you drink 1 liter a day. And the fourth group, guess what they got to drink every day? 1 liter of water. Now, get this. That's just 33.8 ounces of water. And so there's no surprise here. What they're doing is they're just measuring one thing. What is the weight? Or how has the men's weight changed? Okay? There were no women in the study. So, no surprise here, but those that had soda water, you know, Coca-Cola, they gained 22 pounds in 6 months. So how would you lose 22 pounds? Don't drink soda. The ones that drank the diet soda, you know, the sugar-free stuff, it's usually sweetened with something like aspartame or saccharin, ace sulfamate K, that's at least the way I pronounce it, K for potassium, or maybe it's Splenda or sucralose. You with me on that? You would think that the diet soda group would gain zero weight, but that's not what happened. They gained 3.5 pounds. Now, you tell me. Can you say that you can rely on a diet soft drink because you won't gain weight? No. Now, this is what really gets me right here, and just consider this. The men that drank 1 liter of milk, okay, that's almost 34 ounces. That's over a quart. They did not gain any weight. Are you with me on that? None. Now, those that drank water, a liter of water a day, guess what happened to them? Did they gain weight or did they lose weight? Well, they lost 4.5 pounds. Now, obviously, if we're looking at the soda group, only gaining 3.5 pounds, yes, I would concede to that. That's not as bad as gaining 22 pounds. But what I'm thinking of is they still gained weight. Now, in the milk, it has as many calories, technically, as the sugar soda does, or the Dr. Pepper, you know, sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. So why didn't they gain weight? Well, it all has to do with a master control hormone. It's produced by the beta cells of your pancreas. It's called insulin. And what this means is, when you drink a full sugar soft drink, it's going to release a boatload of insulin. And what does insulin do? It tells your body to store away fat. That would explain why, over 6 months of drinking Coca-Cola, they gained 22 pounds. Now you're thinking, well, why did the diet soft drink? Why did they average a weight gain of 3.5 pounds? Well, it still has to do with insulin. Even though there were zero calories, obviously there's something about the artificial sweeteners that still stimulates your pancreas to release insulin. And when you release insulin, guess what happens? You're gonna listen to your body's messenger, which is insulin, to store away fat. Now, why didn't those that drank a quart of milk a day, a liter, why didn't they gain any weight at all? Because they had the same exact amount of calories as the Coca-Cola did. Well, evidently, there's lactose, which is milk sugar. That's found in milk. But milk also has a substance that Coca-Cola and Diet Coke don't have. It has fat. And so I know that fat is usually a very, very bad word, according to some people, and that we should avoid it like the plague. But is that actually true? So even though there's milk sugar, lactose, and there's fat, fat tends to be very satiating. And so maybe when they actually satisfied their body's requirements for calories, they just had this natural desire to eat less. And I think that's one of the things I've read many times about artificially sweetened anything, whether it's a drink or it's a candy or whatever it may, or ice cream. You just get this natural craving that you want to eat more. That's what insulin release does. It makes you crave more. You're just not satisfied. Now, what they did was they looked at a glucose tolerance test. I'm sorry, I skipped the second follow-up study. What they did was they took those that only drank the diet soda and they tried to switch them to water. And I'm almost positive the water they gave them in this study, they called it seltzer. I don't know that I have ever bought a seltzer, but I've purchased Topo Chico before. And man, I like that. There's a lot of people, they can't stand Topo Chico, but I think it's great. It's mineral water with carbon dioxide. And so they noticed that when they gave the diet soda drinkers only seltzer to drink, all of a sudden they lost 6 pounds pretty quick. So there's no calories in either the seltzer or the spritzer water or sparkling water. Well, why did their weight change? Well, once again, insulin. So it's so interesting that when you drink a diet soda, your insulin response is 20% higher than if you drink something like a Topo Chico. Or, if you don't want to call it that, you'd call it sparkling water. So, this is just very, very interesting. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. And I think someone's trying to call, but they're calling the old number. So here's the new number to the radio station if you want to call in and ask me a specific question. So the number is 903-589-8507. 8502. And I'm actually standing on the ready. This is a go time. I'm ready to work. Okay, I came across another article that I don't know if it's going to appeal to everybody, but it appeals to me. Because I think okay, let's go to the phone lines first and we'll come back to this. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Roy.
How are you?
Very good. My wife and I, we're in our 70s. We're actually fairly thin people. And we've heard you talk quite a few times about maintaining muscle mass. And if I work out, I used to work out and I would gain weight. But lately, last few years, if I work out, it seems like I just stay skinny. It's hard for me to put on any more muscle mass. And so we're wondering if we should be taking some protein supplement. And I wanted you to comment on that and just sort of advise us on whether that might be something for us to do.
Yeah, that's something that's worth looking into. I mean, probably one of the most common proteins or a protein supplement that's famous for helping a person put on muscle mass is going to be whey protein. Usually the form that I look for is called whey protein isolate.
Okay.
And I think
whey
that's...
whey protein isolate.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. But man, you're talking about the greatest challenge of all time as a person ages. There is a medical condition that's called sarcopenia. I don't know if you've ever heard that term before. I get to read about it frequently because I enjoy those topics. But sarcopenia basically means you're kind of wasting away. You're losing your muscle mass or your strength. And I'm pretty sure you've seen that in the real world, right?
Yes, yes.
Have you ever been out in public before? This is just my example. And you may stop to get gas at a filling station, and you go in there, and you may see an older person that they just look like they're rail thin. I don't mean that as a derogatory comment. It's just an observation. Like, they're just basically skin and bones. And so I remember back at the start of the coronavirus or the corona outbreak that one of the greatest predictors of who was going to be able to survive the corona if they were hospitalized, you know, with a COVID-19 infection, was how much they weighed or their muscle mass. So when somebody goes into the hospital and they're sick with this viral infection and they weigh 115 pounds when they really would be much better off weighing 145, they don't do well. And one of the reasons is part of your immune system, it's got to go to your muscles as your bank account for amino acids to use those proteins to make antibodies so you can fight an infection. So yeah, the struggle and the challenge is trying to keep your muscle mass up as you age.
Well, how do we best do that? Do we get some whey protein? And what do you have a...
Yeah, I don't know what you're eating as far as your dietary intake of protein, but usually my basic definition of what real protein is, it usually comes from an animal source. So whether that be eggs, if that's turkey, there's just a million types of fish out there. You know, there's a lot of times I'll ask a person, do you like to eat meat? And they'll say, absolutely not. But if I mention, do you like tuna fish salad? They go, yeah, I'll eat that. Well, that's like a great source of protein.
Okay.
So what has to happen if a person is not gaining muscle mass, even though they're just like you, they're working out, they're putting stress on their muscles, they're giving signals to the body, I need you to grow some new muscle and become stronger. You want your body to adapt and to become strong and to do what you want. But you've got to eat enough protein. And so that means you might have to eat a little bit more than what you think is initially satisfying. So like the other day, I was talking to a gentleman, and I said, how much protein? He said, I eat plenty. I said, well, what does that look like? And he said, it's just one boiled egg in the morning. And one boiled egg is going to be probably, just a rough estimate, probably 6.5 grams of protein. And if this guy weighed 250 pounds, He's probably going to need like a bare minimum of like 125 or 130 grams of protein just to maintain his muscle mass. Now, I don't want to get overly distracted, but let me say this right here. When you were 13 or 14 years old and your body started pumping out massive amounts of testosterone, which is normal, you could probably eat 3 cheeseburgers and it would completely, your body is so efficient at absorbing and assimilating and utilizing protein that you'd probably have like instant quadricep muscles and calf muscles and biceps and pecs and all that good stuff. You'd probably have a six pack without even trying because your body's so efficient. But as we age, we definitely lose our efficiency at how we can assimilate protein. So the simple solution to that is, if you want to age gracefully, you need to exercise. And number two, you've got to get probably a little bit more protein than what you would normally consider. And so like you're requesting or asking, can I supplement my diet and my workout regimen with maybe a protein powder? And the answer is yes. I don't know what your weight is. What's your weight, for example?
About 145, and I'm 5'8".
And so what you may have to do is you're probably going to have to consume a minimum of 100 to 120 grams of protein so you can move that needle toward muscle gain.
Okay.
I know it's kind of shocking, isn't it?
Yes.
So that's where something like a protein shake may come in really handy, because if you get like a, depending on what the label says on the list of ingredients and instructions on the back side of the canister of whey protein, it may be 1 to 2 scoops. You might be able to get 40 or 50 grams just with that. That's huge.
Okay. The whey, that's the whey protein, correct?
Mm-hmm. Now, if you ask me from the other side of the coin on this, man, I'm hard-pressed not to recommend things like eggs. I think eggs are just nearly one of the most perfect proteins of all time. They're just so nutrient-dense. Have you ever gotten an egg before where you cracked it in a skillet to make, like, eggs over easy for yourself? And the yolk looks so pale, like the very light yellow color.
Maybe. I'm not sure, but because I scramble them a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. Well, the reason I'm saying that, I bought some eggs this week, and when I cracked them open, I have never seen a yolk. It looked like a burning orange-red sun. It was so nutrient-dense. So usually you can tell by looking at the yolk, if it's like a pale yellow, that means it doesn't really have a lot of nutrients. And so how did they get there? Well, the chickens just did not have access to the greatest food of all time. Now, I'm sure you and I are just alike. We grew up on a farm. We had chickens. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out chickens do a great work on the farm. They're looking for crickets and worms and grasshoppers. I've seen them eat a ton of flies. I've never seen a fly survive, you know, with the chicken feed. And you know what? When we had chickens, they would even eat mice and small snakes and lizards. So when you get yolks that are deeply colored like an orange burning sun red, those are the ones that are just jam-packed with the most nutrients. So if you happen to find a brand or you have a source where you can get eggs that have a more deeply, richly colored yolk, that's what's in your best interest. That's going to give you the biggest bang for the buck when it comes to more nutrient-dense foods.
Okay.
The other one is...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, no. What was your question?
About how many eggs does it take to, say, be 120 grams of protein?
Well, if each egg is 6.5 grams, here, I'll just do it on this. I've got Randy's calculator right here. So let me say it this way. 4 eggs is probably 25 grams, okay?
Okay.
So if you were to eat eight eggs a day, that's 50 grams of protein. And you know what? There's some people that when they're training for an athletic event, it's super easy for them to consume 6 to 8 eggs a day minimum, just to give them all the balanced amino acids or proteins. But then you have other forms of protein that are very easy to assimilate. That's called fish. Now, if I asked you, do you like tuna fish salad? What would you say?
Absolutely, yes.
Now, if you have red meat or you have beef, I am convinced it's very nutrient dense. But it also takes quite a bit more energy to break it down or to digest it because it's very rich. It's loaded with collagen. But see, collagen is what you need if you're going to grow strong tendons, ligaments, cartilage, bone. So all those things your body needs in order to build strong framework and strong muscles. So you may have to, I mean, all you can do is just put this to the test. If you start eating or consume or making it your goal to aim for 100 grams of protein a day, you're going to find out real quick if you go from 145 to 146 to 147. That would be, you're in the positive, you're in the black on protein instead of being in the red.
Okay, okay. All right. So whey protein shakes. And keep eating those eggs and tuna fish.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I have read recently when it comes to both men and women, because I do think you just mentioned your wife, didn't you?
Yes, we're both kind of in the same category.
Well, there was a study, and the study looked at one thing. It looked at people that got enough protein and they also exercised. They wanted to ask the question, if we supplemented their diet with a, if you want to call it a spice or an herb or a vegetable, that's fine. It's called fenugreek.
Okay, can you spell it, fenugreek?
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm doing it too fast. F-E-N-U, and then spell the word Greek. Fenugreek.
Okay.
So, fenugreek is very, very interesting. One of the studies that I read recently, all they were doing was looking at women that had horrible postmenopausal symptoms. And so let me just kind of cover a few of them. They experienced tremendous dryness. They had insomnia. I don't think I have to explain insomnia, but their sleep was not great. How about that? They had tremendous issues with their mood and their emotions. And so I don't mean they were overly happy. I'm probably referring to the basic idea of being cranky, irritable, you know, angry, that sort of thing. Are you with me on that?
Yes.
Then they measured the category of hot flashes. So if a woman had a hormone imbalance, it would be more common that she may experience just really uncomfortable hot flashes, and that's just a whole different form of misery. I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, a woman was telling me, I think I sleep for maybe 15 minutes, and then a hot flash wakes me up. Well, how would you like it? Or how would I like it if I woke up every 15 minutes with a hot flash? That'd be like a form of torture, wouldn't it?
It'd be hard to get a good night's rest.
And I think the other category they looked at was the category called libido. I'm pretty sure you know what the word libido means. It just means, does being intimate sound like a good idea? You know, that's probably like an oversimplification. But what they did was they looked at supplementing with fenugreek. Not for one day. I want to say the study was either 4 weeks or 8 weeks. Forgive me for not remembering. I can look it up, though. But in every category that I just mentioned, I'll just say hot flashes, insomnia, mood, and libido, every single one of them improved on fenugreek. And I think the reason why I'm bringing that up, there's a principle called growth. And growth, in my mind, would be healing or repair or improvement. So we're looking at what can we do to improve or make the best of what we got. And that's why you're asking about how can we gain some muscle mass. And so the other study that I've looked at shows that one of the best things you can do to improve your muscle mass is just fenugreek. So it's widely available.
Is that a brand or a...
No, it's just a supplement. The fenugreek is the name of the plant.
Oh, okay.
Forgive me for not explaining that. Just like if I say basil, that's an herb or a plant that grows. Fenugreek is not the name of a company. It's just the name of the plant that grows in nature. Kind of like if I said rosemary or potatoes or tomatoes.
Okay, great.
What'd she say?
How much do you take with that? She was asking.
Well, I don't know enough about your situation, but your starting point would probably be looking at the manufacturer's recommendations and following that. And then if you're curious, just look up for yourself articles and just type in the question, can fenugreek help improve athletic performance?
Okay, great.
So you've got those things to look at.
Very good. Okay, the protein whey, is there a type or any particular brand?
Yeah, the type is what I mentioned earlier. It's called whey protein isolate.
Okay, great.
And the best ones are gonna say in parentheses, low temperature ion exchange, which means they didn't use a high temperature to extract the whey from the dairy or from the milk.
Okay.
So if it says low temperature ion exchange, those are probably the best ones. They're the safest. And if they don't say that, I mean, whey protein, if it's just cooked at a high temperature, it may have like a boatload of oxidized cholesterol in it. And you don't want that, because oxidized cholesterol, that's the kind that builds up in your arteries and clogs them up.
Okay. Okay. Very good information. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope that helps a bunch.
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bless you.
Thank you very much, sir. You too. Okay, there's a phone line officially open at 903-589-8507. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning. I'm sorry, I have I don't even know what it is, but my voice is different this morning.
Oh, you and me both. That's fine.
I have a question. First question is about my husband. He took this calcium score for his heart, CT scan, and his score was 1,200, like 23.1. And when I was checking all that out on the internet, 400 and higher was like a significant. He has extensive coronary artery disease.
Yes, ma'am.
And so. But I don't know how accurate that is. Or
super, super accurate. It's like so accurate, it's unbelievably accurate.
Well,
Sorry, I wasn't saying that to be negative.
Well, they did say, you know, they set him up with an appointment with a cardiologist, and he can't get in for like 2 weeks. But I feel so, I don't know, bad, because they had been wanting him to take statins for years, and I wouldn't let him. In fact, he had a doctor call in and said, why hadn't you gotten the prescription yet?
Yeah.
And he said, my wife won't let me. And he said, well, you need to find another doctor then.
Oh, my goodness.
It's exactly. I got him, my witness. And so I don't know. I think it's a lot of stress. He has he's a general manager, high stress, which he just retired this year, but I think stress is the cause of it. And he likes a lot of sweets. But I don't think it was because he didn't take, you know, statins.
Yeah, and I'm looking up an article as you're speaking. I'm not trying to be rude and multitask, because I'm not good at multitasking, but I want to say the very first article that I read came from the year 1994, and they asked a simple question. If you take a statin drug, and that can be anything from, you know, atorvastatin to Vytorin to Lipitor, you know, something like that, a statin drug. And so, in that study, they said that 20 years of using statins, they were completely unable to cause any plaque to be removed. But there's a study right here that I'm looking at. There's a cardiologist by the name of Stephen Neeson, MD. He was saying, Well, I haven't read this article. I'm so sorry. He's talking about Lipitor and Crestor and Atorvastatin. But they're saying, yes, you can. But can I give you, like, a different take on this?
Yes, please.
Okay, you don't really have to eat a boatload of sugar every day to have your insulin or your blood sugar level shoot up. You just don't. I know that's what I would think of. Like, for example, if we did a blood test on your husband and it showed there's a simple marker that measures what your blood sugar is averaging, like over about a 3-month period. It's called hemoglobin A1C. Have you ever heard of that term before?
Yes. And he's, the last time he had his blood work, he said it, his is creeping up there, but not to any point like pre-diabetic or anything.
Yeah, so if it was, if it's probably around 4.5, 4.6, 4.7, most of the studies demonstrate that there's just almost no ability of plaque to form in the arteries. So I don't know what his is. I'm just kind of speculating. And so the problem is that sugar, when it builds up in the bloodstream, it just becomes very sticky. I mean, just kind of use your imagination and think, if I wanted to make, you know, caramel or caramel candy, how am I going to do that? I'm going to pour some Karo syrup in a skillet and start heating and stirring it, and eventually I'll burn the sugar and it'll turn brown. And that's what caramel is. What now?
That's a great analogy.
Well, you know, I could probably build a case right now. If you wanted to build up plaque in your arteries and totally wreck your heart, then eating caramel would be a good way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Because all it is, it's just rusted, oxidized, burnt sugar. Just like I told the gentleman earlier, if you get regular whey protein and they've heated it up to 700 degrees, most likely the cholesterol in there is already oxidized. That forms plaque. But I think the point that I was getting to, he doesn't really have to eat a bunch of refined sugar to have high blood sugar. All you got to have is just a lot of stress. And when you have all these burdens on you to perform, have you ever heard the term high performance anxiety?
No.
Well, neither had I, but I had someone explain it to me. But it makes total sense. You're in a position. Your job is super important. You're like in charge. And so that's what your husband is. He's a manager. It's his job to make sure everything goes according to plan so the company doesn't go broke or something like that.
Yeah.
But with his high performance anxiety, these type of people, they all day long, they're constantly processing information like, how can I make this work? But they just don't give themselves any chance to rest or recover. But my point is, they live in a state of just excessive amounts of a, if I say it, a neurotransmitter or hormone called adrenaline and cortisol. These chemicals are just so high, there's just not much that can wreck the arteries, quite like super high levels of stress.
And also, he fits in that category of type A personality.
Yeah, so he's a hard driving man, isn't he?
Yes.
You know what? On one level, I would really like to meet your husband, because I think I would like him a whole lot. But he probably doesn't have much. He probably doesn't give himself much downtime or much care to help counter all that stress, does he?
Well, he does. We have a little fishing camp, and he does fish.
Wait, did you say fish? I'm going to need to know the exact GPS location for my own selfish purposes this morning.
That is his only downtime. He loves these fishing tournaments, and he's real competitive, and he loves to fish. So,
well, I wouldn't blame yourself over the statin deal. I know that's an easy thing for them to do, and that's what the doctor's saying. If you don't do exactly like I say, I'm dumping you.
He did. It was just insane. But I'm a firm believer that it's not cholesterol. I've been listening to you for years. Not just you. So many, you know, sources that respected, highly respected, say the same thing. Cardiologists, you know, and they put my son-in-law, who's 33, on one a statin the other day, and he's taking it. You know how the old he's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to tell him not to, and but now.
Well,
I do.
the poor thing about your
husband. I'm calling you because I want more information.
Oh, yeah. Well,
look, it's not the statins.
No, well, let me just try to drop a little few tidbits of information on you, okay?
Okay,
so I know I'm going to go all over the place, so just forgive me, but hopefully in the things that I'm saying, there'll be enough information for everybody where we can sort of, figure out how do we resolve this. And so one of the studies that I'm thinking of in my mind took place in a African country called Nigeria. You ever heard of Nigeria?
I have.
Well, there's a hospital in Nigeria. And I don't even remember the doctor's name, and it's probably an African name that I probably would not do a good job of pronouncing because it was just so long with a lot of syllables in it, and so I may butcher the name. So, but anyway, he was in a position where he had a whole bunch of men under his care, and these men, they had the same thing in common. They all had very high blood pressure, and they had very high cholesterol. Are you with me on that?
Yes.
Okay, and I think the men probably averaged 5 to 6 medications they had been taking for years. But the thing of it is, when they would test their calcium scoring test, even though they were on these drugs, they really couldn't see a substantial improvement. Now, what this doctor did was, he kind of thought outside the box. And what he did was, he did a simple blood test called ferritin. F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N. Have you ever heard of a ferritin test?
I have.
Okay. So in this test, he'd all measured the men's ferritin levels. And so we're really on the same topic here. Just like I mentioned that caramel candy is just rusted, burnt sugar. Ferritin is a marker that tells me how much rusted iron that man is holding in his body, and there's no way you're going to know what that number is unless you actually test it. I mean, I could guess, but usually when men have a red, rosy complexion and they're red-faced, oh, baby, that's high ferritin right there. Does your husband have high blood pressure by chance?
No, he really doesn't. And
okay, that's good.
Any high blood pressure.
Well, and the point that I'm going to get to about those African men from Nigeria, this doctor had a crazy idea that instead of just giving them more cholesterol-lowering drugs and more blood pressure medications, what he wanted to do was he wanted to ask them, would they be willing just to donate blood? And so, for example, if your husband said today, I'm going to go to Carter Blood Care, it's over by TJC, and I'm going to donate a unit of blood. Well, what happens is every time you donate blood, you lower your ferritin levels significantly. I'll tell you this. If you want a man to hurt all the time, ferritin is a pretty good way of doing that because you're just full of old rust.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it took an average of 4 donations, meaning just one after the other. There's a period of time between the first donation and the second, and so on and so forth. But what he noticed was all of a sudden their cholesterol levels began to lower as he lowered the ferritin. And their blood pressure began to lower because no longer were their arteries so inflamed and irritated. And so I know this is a simple idea here, but any structure in the body that stays chronically inflamed, your body is going to calcify it. So the newest term that they're using in medicine to describe what's really happening is they're talking about that very thin lining of your arteries. It's called the glycocalyx. Have you ever heard that term before?
No, I haven't.
So if that's healthy, there's no calcification. If that becomes unhealthy, there is calcification. So we're trying to get rid of the inflammation. But these men in this Nigerian study, they became free of all blood pressure medications and cholesterol drugs just by donating blood. It just took time to get there. Does that make sense?
Yes, and our church just had a blood drive, and I wish we had known this.
No, you could just take him out back today in the garden and just, poke a hole in him and...
blood left.
Wait a second. What if you forget about him? That may not go so well. Let's not do that.
he's so good. He does everything I tell him without question. That's why I do feel kind of response, like,
well, there's a lot of moving parts on this, and so maybe the second thing that I want to talk about, have you ever heard of a fat soluble vitamin called vitamin K2?
Yes.
Well, that's one that I think we should pay attention to under these circumstances, because vitamin K2, and like any other nutrient, there's always the Goldilocks just right amount. I know you know what I mean by that. So
yes, I do.
A lot of times people will take K2, but in my mind, they're taking far, far too little of it. Probably a dose that would actually help remove plaque from the... See, one of the roles of vitamin K2, a fat-soluble vitamin, is to make sure calcium does not build up in a location where it doesn't belong. So if I asked you, where do you want your calcium to go? You would say, well, I think I'd prefer it to go to my bones or maybe my teeth. Mm-hmm. But do you don't want them to go to your kidneys and develop calcium kidney stones, do you?
I think one of the supplements we take has K2 in it. Is there one that they need to go together to work? Or,
well, what I want to kind of sell you on first is the amount.
Okay.
And so the amount's probably going to be on the K2, probably somewhere, maybe just right around or a little bit above 1,000 micrograms. That's mcgs.
Okay.
Now we're talking more of a therapeutic amount. So if you only got 100 micrograms of vitamin K2, that may not be enough to change the person's chemistry or physiology toward healing and repair.
I don't know why that's not just common knowledge out in the medical community. You mean
I've like billboards? You mean as opposed to billboards that have statin drugs on them?
Right. I just saw something the other day and it made a lot of sense. It said, hey, how about instead of putting a cute little pink ribbon on the new product for women in February or whatever month it is, how about just taking out the chemicals that cause cancer out of their product?
Listen, you have a genius plan. Let's hope that they can put RFK in Health and Human Services, and maybe he can start helping to steer us away from all these chemicals.
Well, he's the first I've ever heard just talk about it.
Oh, my goodness. It's just incredible. I'm so hopeful. You tell me, do we need to put pesticides in cheeseburgers for children? No. Do we need to add food dyes and monosodium? No, none of that stuff. None of that has any nutritional quality to it. No, and I'm not trying to be negative by answering it this way, but there is a very specific reason why statin drugs are promoted so heavily and vitamin K2 is not promoted so heavily. So I'll let you figure it out. You seem to be pretty smart. But if you will, if all you did was just leave the program this morning and say, I'm going to look up for myself, can vitamin K2 help reverse plaque that builds up in the coronary arteries?
That's great that it can reverse. I know some supplements, they help to not, get the plaque, but that would reverse it. This is great. Great news.
Well, what I'm doing is I'm looking it up right now. Sorry. If I was faster on pushing buttons. Oh, I didn't spell plaque correctly. Hang on, let me spell it correctly. Can you reverse, here it is right here. Can you reverse artery calcification with high dose vitamin C and vitamin D? Now, that's kind of what you were alluding to a while ago.
Right.
Well, in this article right here, it says not really. Okay. So I haven't read the article yet. But when I look at the studies that come from Holland, where they eat a lot of Gouda cheese, which is a source of vitamin K2, all their arteries stay very spry and flexible and supple. So I don't want to forget that. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can look at this. And so does your husband take cod liver oil? Does he take magnesium? Does he take resveratrol?
The cod liver oil pills, yes.
I think that's real smart. So I don't know the reason why he has plaque in his coronary arteries, but you're saying he doesn't have diabetes?
No, I think it's stress.
Yeah.
I think we need to get on a regimen, you know, of walking and...
Oh, yes, ma'am.
And getting the stress, you know, well, now he doesn't have the stress. But...
Did he have a really, really tough job?
Yes, he did. He would come home and I'd say, how's your day? He goes, you don't even want to know, you know.
Oh, man, yeah.
Well, because everything falls on the general manager, you know, everything.
Oh, my goodness. So one question you've never asked, where is this magical fishing hole that you are hiding from me? Lake what?
Rayburn.
You mean Sam Rayburn?
Sam Rayburn, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. How do I get there from here?
He's there now.
So what is his one favorite bait, the secret to catching all the world record bass?
Oh, gosh. I've heard... He'll call his buddies and they'll just talk about on the crankbait and on the chatterbait and the beetle spit.
Wait, did you say chatterbait?
Chatterbait or watermelon something or, you know.
Oh, man. Man, wait a second. Let me write that down. This is like a great game plan for me today. Watermelon, chatterbait, crankbait. I've got it.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much for your phone call. And you know what? That would probably be a very, very good idea for me, just in response to what you're asking, is if I just did my own research and I came up with a more organized format for the radio program on legitimate studies about removing plaque from arteries. Does that sound reasonable?
Yes. And I really don't have any kind of sorrow over him not taking statins. I just wanted to be able to explain to him. That's why I called you. What else could it be? Because I'm a firm believer that they cause your liver damage and your muscles to deteriorate.
What about all the people that develop cognitive decline or dementia just as a byproduct of consuming them?
Yes.
A lot of people. I'm sorry.
One other thing. Is there a connection? He falls asleep. He'll come out, you know, have dinner, and at about 7:30, he's out. And he goes, I don't know why I don't have energy. He just turned 70, and he's like, I just don't have any.
No. That goes back to the first thing I said. If his ferritin levels, and so I'm just kind of giving you some guidelines. If his ferritin levels are probably around 50 to 70, he's perfect. But if it was 250, that's a whole different ball of wax. Because what that means is you got a bunch of rusted iron, and that's soaking up all his oxygen, making him tired.
And I was wondering about, since his coronary arteries might be getting smaller, he's not getting the oxygen.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Oh, I totally agree with you on that.
He doesn't have that energy anymore. So when they may have to do a stent.
I get that. But, yeah, we're on the same page. If he is not able to deliver enough oxygen and nutrients and blood flow, then it's going to mean fatigue and exhaustion. You're going to play out real quick. You're right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I don't want to take up any more time, but thank you so much.
Yes, I enjoyed the phone call, and thanks for telling me about Sam Rayburn. Now, where do I actually put in? Just anywhere?
Mill Creek.
Mill Creek. Let me write that down. Are there a lot of stumps?
I don't think so, but they have alligators.
You don't have to try to threaten me. I've already determined I'm going to use a watermelon crankbait. Hey, thanks a bunch for the phone call.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All righty, bye-bye. All right. There is a phone line officially open. The number here is 903-589-8507. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, I'll tell you what, when you're talking about fishing, I definitely wish I was out there with you.
Well, I tried to get her to reveal all the top secret information, and all I could get was Sam Rayburn and Mill Creek.
Those descriptions of the bait like the watermelon.
Yeah.
That's the color of a worm, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Right. Listen, real quick, the reason I'm calling, and it's been getting me for a long time. I'm 78 years of age now, just turned in October.
Happy birthday.
No, thank you much. I've got what they call tinnitus, or ringing in the ears, and it's getting progressively worse. It's causing sleep deprivation.
Oh, it's that bad, is it?
Terrible bother. Do you possibly have any idea how I can get this under control and maybe eliminate it before it drives me nuts?
Okay, well, let me just cover some basic things that I'm familiar with, okay?
Okay.
There's a website called YouTube. You ever heard of that?
Oh, yes. I use it all the time.
There's a video. It's actually not a video. They just play a sound on it. But there are some studies that show that playing what's called pink noise, to me, it sounds kind of like ocean waves.
Right.
But they're showing that there are some people with bad tinnitus or tinnitus that respond very well at removing the inflammation from their middle ear by playing pink noise. So just look that up. It's not going to cost you anything. And plus, it's pink. It's the color of watermelon. What could go wrong with watermelon, right?
There you go.
So, in past reading about this topic, there are some studies that have an association between not getting enough blood flow in the small capillaries, and that may be a factor. And sometimes they will refer to that as small vessel disease. And it's just like the lady that was just on the phone talking about her real nice husband, that he's just not getting enough blood flow, and not enough oxygen. Now, oxygen is the one thing that would resolve all this. If I had a way to put you in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber safely, I don't know, maybe 25 treatments later, you may not have any more issues because they're just using oxygen. They might crank it up to 100% oxygen and put you under 5 atmospheres of pressure. But oxygen is like the greatest healing element in the universe. So in my fantasy world, I would have a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and I'd say, buddy, you come down here for 1 hour a day and we're going to get you fixed up. Or 1 hour a couple times a week, something like that. So wherever you live, you might type into the computer, is there anybody with hyperbaric oxygen treatments? So that's just for your information. There are studies, though, that show that some people benefit after a few months of taking an herb called ginkgo biloba. And ginkgo biloba, you already take it?
I do take it as part of my supplement program.
Do you take plenty of magnesium and fish oil?
I definitely do.
Okay, there are studies that show that it can be due to toxicity. And toxicity is going to refer to accumulation of aluminum or lead or arsenic or mercury. So, did you drink a lot of soft drinks out of an aluminum can for year after year?
Well, yeah, in the past, of course I have. Yeah.
Well, I think everybody knows what we're talking about. And it may be that you have a buildup of aluminum. That has an association. But when I said toxicity, I was really thinking about Tylenol and ibuprofen or aspirin.
I don't do any of these. Actually, I'm not on any kind of medication program. I thank God that I'm not having to rely on that.
Do you remember when did this first start? I mean, when's the last time that you didn't have this sound at all?
Oh, my goodness. This must have been 20 so many years ago.
So you could have literally been 58 when you first began to notice that there was a kind of an annoying sound.
Right.
I've had some patients tell me that if they put a couple of drops of castor oil in their ear right before bedtime, that over time that seemed to help a lot.
Can I make a referral here for a moment? Several years ago, I guess it's been 8 years ago, I caught an advertisement about a product that they've tested that takes care of tinnitus. They said that the ringing is really not in the ear, but it's some type of nerve damage.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Within either from the ear to the brain, or within the brain, it's kind of like the nerves are damaged to a point where it needs to be repaired in some form. And I think some kind of nutritional approach would probably accomplish that. Like, say, this product that they were advertising seemed to be successful. I don't know if you ever heard.
Oh, yes, and that's really what I meant by saying all these things. I'm just trying to make it sound simple, but probably 100% of this is due to some type of brain inflammation or brain damage or brain dysfunction. Now, I'm not trying to say that to be negative. So, I mean, even if you had like a very simple blood test done, looking at your fasting insulin level is one of the biggest clues of all time, or another test called hemoglobin A1C. And so I'm always looking for simple ways to help a person improve. But if you have what's called insulin resistance, I mean, I'm not trying to get overly sidetracked, but I was reading article after article about mental illness this morning before I came on the radio, because I saw a clip where a psychiatrist was talking about 100% of all people with brain issues is due to insulin resistance. It's a metabolic disease. And so how efficiently your body makes energy, it has everything to do with how rapidly you're going to heal.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And so if you go to a doctor and they do blood tests, do they ever tell you anything about the results at all?
Well, it's been a while. I'm a veteran. I used to go to the VA clinic there in Tyler.
Well, you ought to go and just let them do a full workup and just take advantage of the services they offer, just so you can get your own information.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would be... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Have you success? I mean, well, I'll say success. You're a very successful doctor.
You're asking a reasonable question.
Have you ever treated anybody with tinnitus?
Yeah, but I'm going to go off rail here. You know how you said that you read this advertisement and it was about the real issue is there's neurological inflammation or damage? Isn't that kind of what you said?
All right.
Well, there's a gland right there at the forefront of the brain, at the base of the brain. It's called the pituitary. I do not know how many people I've seen that had horrible sounds and ringing in the ear, but the real problem was that the pituitary was just really struggling or really inflamed. I don't know why this is hard to think about, because if I said your heart is damaged, it's weak and struggling, you'd say, oh, I can conceptually understand that. You mean I've got coronary artery disease? I'd say, yeah, that's it. But who do you talk with on the street that says, is it possible that your pituitary can become inflamed and weak? Yeah, but we just think about that at every other organ. But I've seen a lot when I work on the pituitary or I help with the pituitary, that's where the annoying sounds can go away in those people. I am not trying to make a universal statement that covers every human being on the planet. But when you start talking about the pituitary, you start thinking, for example, what would damage the pituitary? Well, one thing, and unfortunately I'm out of time, would be the use of any artificial sweeteners. And that could be in the form of chewing gum or mints or a diet soda is one example. Or a protein drink.
I stay away from all that. I stay away from all artificial. I strictly go with honey if I want a sweetener. No sugar whatsoever.
No, and that's good, and I appreciate all that. Unfortunately, I'm completely out of time, but what I will do is I'll try to come up with some more rock solid research instead of just off the top of my head.
I'd love to give you a call at your office. Maybe we could set up an appointment. How's
all right. Well, thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you have a great day, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.